Of you, it's good to see you. I appreciate your interest in our study this morning, manifested by your presence. We've got a lot to talk about this morning as we concern ourselves with the reign of King Solomon. So if you would please open your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 1. 1 Kings chapter 1. The parallel, as you'll see on the board of the text in the Chronicles, you'll find it in 2 Chronicles beginning in chapter 1. I've asked that you carefully read 1 Kings chapter 1 through chapter 11, and also, if you would, 2 Chronicles chapter 1 through 9. These two texts, as we mentioned, are parallel in our study. We're going to follow the text, for the most part, from the account in the Kings. For purposes of our study, we'll be referring to some things in the Chronicles, but primarily the account from the Kings. In this segment of our study, we're talking about the history and geography of the Bible, as you well know, and the importance of that in the development of the scheme of redemption. We have begun our study by identifying the places on the map, and then the things, of course, that make those places so noteworthy are the events that occurred there. And as we study, we want to increase our appreciation of God, increase in our appreciation of the great things that He has done in His providence through history to bring His Son into the world, that we might enjoy the forgiveness of our sins. This segment that we're studying currently regarding the reign of King Solomon, the end of David's life and the beginning of his son Solomon's reign over the kingdom of Israel, is not just a capsule study. It has a place in this development of history. As we have talked about, the beginning of the promises of the scheme of God to save man in the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. And then we saw that repeated generations later unto Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1, 2, and 3, with the identifying of the nation, the land, and the seed promise. And then we saw the development of that as the descendants of Abraham developed into a great nation, and God Himself called them a holy nation in Exodus chapter 19. We saw then, through the leadership of Joshua, he brought them into the promised land, and the land promise was fulfilled. Joshua said in Joshua chapter 11, the last verse, what is it, verse 23, I believe, of that chapter, 23 or 24, and then we saw in Joshua chapter 21, beginning in verse 43 through verse 45, Joshua affirming that God gave you the land, you possessed the land, you dwelt in the land, not one thing has failed. But contingent upon their continued obedience, they would get to remain in the land. But if they did not obey God, what would ultimately happen to them? They would lose the land. Now, what we have studied so far, we saw that they have asked for a king. Saul became their first king, David then the second king, Solomon now the third king, each reigning for 40 years. That period of time is identified as the United Kingdom. We're going to hold up right there on our study of the timeline and go back and discuss just a few more things that relate to the conclusion of David's reign and the beginning of Solomon's reign. We've noted that David messed up big time. He committed sin in that he took the wife of Uriah the Hittite, her name was Bathsheba, and he committed adultery with her. And we read about that where? 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. We saw what David did as Nathan the prophet made that clear to him in 2 Samuel chapter 12. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, Nathan illustrated with the story of a man who had a little ewe lamb, and he took care of it like a daughter, and a rich man who had multiple flocks and herds, and he had a visitor come, but he took that one man's little ewe lamb and killed it for his guest. David was angry and said that the man that hath done this is worthy of death and should restore fourfold. Well, we note that Nathan, his stinging or powerful words were, "Thou art the man." He began to reveal unto David what would be the consequence of his sin, that he himself would not die and his sin would be forgiven, but there are consequences. What were some of them? His son would die. That's right. The child that was to be born to Bathsheba would die. What else would happen? All right, there would be strife within his house. Before we get to that, we know that he would be involved in war for the rest of his life. But the strife within his house, what kind of things occurred in his house? It was ugly, wasn't it? And then when he came back, he still wasn't welcomed and tried to take the kingdom away, and then he was killed in battle, and it was just awful. And we would like to think that that would be the end of it. But as we come to the book of 1 Kings, we see that that's really not the end of it. We commented and closed our study Wednesday night by noting that David is old. The text tells us that he's well stricken in years. And because he's well stricken in years, we might note that he's not well. And the text tells us that he couldn't stay warm. Now, maybe you've known somebody that was old. They were cold all the time, just froze to death. And we say, well, that's poor circulation. Well, we're not the doctor in this case, but we know that David was just old and he couldn't stay warm. And what was their solution to it? All right. And her name was Abishag, the Shunammite. And we note that she was very fair, and she cherished the king and ministered to him, but the king knew her not. We might note just here that this was not intended to be a sexual relationship between David and this woman. But Adonijah, David's son, said, I will be the king. You see that in verse 5? I will be the king. And he exalted himself and began to prepare chariots and horsemen and men to run before him, and his father had not displeased him, and his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, why hast thou done so? And he was also a very goodly man, and he was born after Absalom, and he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and Abiathar, the priest, and they followed, following Adonijah helped him. Now, we want to notice who these characters are, because they become very important in just a little bit regarding the beginning of the reign of King Solomon. But the problem is, here we have a division among those who have been followers of David. If you look at the text in verse 8, Zadok the priest and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada and Nathan the prophet and Shemaiah and Rei and the mighty men that belonged to David were not with Adonijah. Now, do you not see that Adonijah, much like Absalom, is driving a wedge? Much like Absalom. Now, you would like to think that David's old and he's approaching death and that the end of his problems would have occurred before now. But no, no. David's still having problems from within his own house. Now, Adonijah declares himself to be king. We notice that Nathan, the prophet, and Benaiah, and the mighty men, and Solomon, his brother, he didn't call to confer over any of these matters. And Nathan, the prophet, spake to Beersheba, the mother of Solomon, and said, haven't you heard that Adonijah has declared himself to be king? We got a problem with that, do we not? He said, go talk to David and see what David has to say about that, and I'll come and I'll listen, and I can bear testimony to what David says about who's going to be king. Well, who had already been declared to be king? Solomon was to be king. In verse 17, she said unto him, my lord, thou swearest by Jehovah thy God unto thy handmaid, saying, assuredly Solomon thy son shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon my throne. And now here we've got Adonijah that's reigning instead. What has David done about this up to this point? Not a thing. Not a thing. But what does he do about it? Look at verse 24. It says, "And Nathan said, My Lord, O king, hast thou said, Adonijah shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon thy throne?" Well, how was that to be answered? King David, did you say that Adonijah was to be king? No, I didn't say that. Well, then who's supposed to be king? Well, Solomon is. Look at verse 28. "Then King David answered and said, Call to me Bathsheba. And she came into the king's presence and stood before the king, and the king sware and said, As Jehovah liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity, verily as I swear unto thee by Jehovah, the God of Israel, saying, Assuredly Solomon thy son shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon my throne in my stead. Verily so will I do this day. Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the earth and did obeisance to the king, and said, Let my lord, King David, live forever." Now we've got Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, and they came before the king, and the king said unto them, "Take with you the servants of your lord, and cause Solomon, my son, to ride upon mine own mule, and bring him down to Gihon, and let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him there king over Israel, and blow ye the trumpet and say, Long live King Solomon." Now, that's a bold proclamation, isn't it? Is there any doubt, any dispute, through the efforts of David now, who is to be king? No, that kind of clears the air, yes. All right. That presents a little conflict here we're going to talk about. Absalom?
Absalom. He was the third. And so all of these people that are creating trouble are people that would have expected themselves to eventually become king.
Irony, isn't it? Irony. But God had said Solomon will be king. Solomon was son number 11, I believe, way down the pike. And a bit of irony involved in that. Now, when Adonijah has declared himself to be king, and all of this is going on about Solomon being identified as king, what is Adonijah in the process of doing? He's having a big party, yes. We might call that in our society the inaugural parade and ball and et cetera, et cetera. He's having a big party. And when word comes to him that David has made Solomon king, that would kind of put Adonijah in a bad light, would it not? Look, if you will, please, at verse 46. "And also Solomon sitteth on the throne of the kingdom. And moreover, the king's servants came to bless our Lord King David, saying, Thy God made the name of Solomon better than thy name, and make his throne greater than thy throne. And the king bowed himself upon his bed, and also thus said the king, Blessed be Jehovah, the God of Israel, who hath given one to sit on my throne this day, mine eyes even seeing it." Now what did Adonijah do? Yeah. Yes, and the horns of the altar, I understand, was most likely in Gibeon. And it's possible that there was an altar erected in Jerusalem as well. Some have speculated on that, and I think there's evidence perhaps that that's true. But Adonijah holds on to the horns of the altar. And Solomon said in verse 51, "Behold, Adonijah feareth King Solomon." It was told Solomon that Adonijah feareth King Solomon, for lo, he hath laid hold on the horns of the altar, saying, "Let King Solomon swear unto me first that he will not slay his servant with the sword." And Solomon said, look at it carefully, verse 52, "If thou shalt show thyself or himself a worthy man, there shall not a hair of him fall to the earth. But if wickedness be found in him, he shall die." Can you imagine saying that about your brother? Would you say they were very close? Probably not. But King Solomon sent, and they brought him down from the altar, and he came and did obeisance to King Solomon, and Solomon said unto him, "Go to thy house." Everything looks good at this point, doesn't it? Adonijah's going to live. God has selected Solomon to be king instead of Adonijah. I want to go back here just a moment to chapter 2. I'm not ready for that next chart. Now David comes in and he speaks to Solomon. Chapter 2 becomes a very important chapter, not only in our study, but it establishes some things that might very well be the theme of several studies when Solomon says to, or rather David says to Solomon in verse 2, "I am going the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man." Now, there is speculation based on that statement and several other statements, some that we'll look at in the third chapter, just how old was Solomon at this point. We know that he reigned for 40 years. And we know that he started out as a very young king, though his age is not given. But we also know that David calls upon him here to show yourself to be a man. And we know that when he is appointed to be king by David, David calls upon those who have sat in his council to help him. All of that together suggests that Solomon is somewhat young. Right, right. So all of this kind of props up the idea that Solomon is a very young man. Josephus, in his histories of the Jews, tells us that Solomon was about 12 when he became king. Now, I don't know if that's true. Josephus was not an inspired man. Most scholars say, well, perhaps he was 20. You know, if we just give him a little more years, say, well, maybe he was 20. He's still a young man. But we know that he reigned as king over Israel for 40 years, which would put him at the ripe old age of about 60 when he died. Would you call that old? No. Remember that. That's going to be important in the third chapter. Yes. Right. A very young man. Just how young, we don't know. But the reason that's important is when we get over to the third chapter, we'll note that one of the conditions upon which he would live to be an old man was that he would keep the commandments of God. Well, did he? No, he didn't. He married all those women and engaged in idolatrous practices. All of that, of course, contrary to what God had commanded. And in particular of the kings. The kings were not to intermarry. None of them were to intermarry with the other nations. But the kings were not to multiply wives, period. And Solomon got, what, 300 wives and 700 concubines? And they were not to make covenants with Egypt, which one of the wives that Solomon had was the daughter of Pharaoh, as you may recall. So Solomon built temples for these idols in the third chapter, and we note that he worshipped those idols, and these women and their idol gods corrupted his heart. Solomon did not live to be a ripe old age. We'll talk more about that when we get to it. But going back to Adonijah, here is a relatively young man, a very young man, in fact, saying to his brother, "If you prove yourself to be worthy, then you'll live. If not, you'll die." That's interesting, isn't it? And then when you look into the second chapter, Solomon being charged by his father to keep the commandments. In verse 3, And keep the charge of Jehovah to walk in His ways and to keep His statutes and His commandments and his ordinances and his testimonies according to that which is written in the law of Moses, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest and whithersoever thou turnest thyself, that Jehovah may establish his word which he spake concerning me, saying, if thy children take heed to their way and walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, there shall not fail thee, said he, a man on the throne of Israel. Verse 5, moreover, thou knowest also what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did unto me, even what he did to the two captains of the host of Israel, unto Abner, the son of Ner, and to Amasa, the son of Jether. And we'll talk more about that as we get to it in just a moment. But what we do see then is in this admonition of David to Solomon, somewhat of a parting charge. But as you drop down into the text in verse 13, we learn that Adonijah came to Bathsheba, his mother, or the mother of Solomon, and desired that Bathsheba go in and make a proposal to Solomon. What was the proposal, John? You remember? Pardon me? Well, he wanted to have Abishag to become his wife. Now remember, Abishag was the young Shunammite woman that had kept David warm. And for all practical purposes, from the appearance, it would make Abishag appear as David's wife. Now, what was wrong with Adonijah desiring to have Abishag to be his wife? What's wrong with that? Why didn't Solomon say, well, sure, she's not married to anybody else, she can be your wife? Why do we see the response on behalf of Solomon? Look, if you will, at verse 22, when Bathsheba comes to Solomon with this request. The king, Solomon, answered and said unto his mother, why dost thou ask Abishag, the Shunammite, for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also? Question, my friends, is there any relationship between Adonijah asking for Abishag and asking for the kingdom? What was it? Yes. All right. That's right. So Adonijah, in asking for Abishag, is saying, I really am the king instead of Solomon, because after all, I have the king's wife. Now, how did Solomon respond to that? That's right. Not having that. You see, the provision upon which you can live is you prove yourself worthy. And when you've asked for Abishag, you've asked for the kingdom. You're not through competing with me for the kingdom. You're not worthy to live. And so David ordered that he be killed, and he was. Well, that's right. Of course, David desired that Absalom be dealt with gently, but he was killed. And so this turmoil in the house of David. David's essentially on his deathbed. And this turmoil in the house of David is still ongoing. Do you see that? Can you trace that all the way back to 2 Samuel chapter 11 with what David did by taking the wife of Uriah the Hittite? And again, we need to underscore who Uriah was. He was one of the mighty men, one of the greatest, most honorable, loyal, valiant men that David had in his army. And David took his wife. So now the consequences just keep happening, don't they? They just keep on. Carolyn? He might think of it as safe base, like we sometimes think of that when we're playing tag. I'm safe here. But it really wasn't, because we know that Joab did the same thing. He went and grabbed onto the horns of the altar, thinking that he would be safe there. And when he was ordered to come and face his death, what's his name? Starts with Benaiah, thank you. Benaiah. He reported that to King Solomon that Joab won't come. He says, I'll just stay here till you kill me. And Solomon said, that's fine, just go there and kill him and then bury him. So it really wasn't a safe zone. Perhaps, yes. You can see that in his thinking, that if he grabs onto the horns of the altar, and then you can see him trying to drag him away and the battle going on, kind of like a kid that's throwing a fit, you know. But that's likely what he supposed, but it wasn't a safe zone. He was taken and he was killed at any rate. Okay? Well, as a result of all of that, you'll note in verse 24 it is. That's the place on the page. It says, Now therefore, as Jehovah liveth, who hath established me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who hath made me a house as he promised, surely Adonijah shall be put to death this day. And King Solomon sent by Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him so that he died. Now, we know that he's taking care of business regarding the rebellion of Adonijah. I want to look just beyond. I'm going to pass over that because I want to look at this. Pass back just a moment. Okay. Well, we know that Solomon has been delivered the pattern by David to build the tabernacle. Or the temple, rather, in Jerusalem that he had received from the Lord. But Solomon is cleaning house. Do you see that? And that by the instruction of his father, David. Of course, this begins with Adonijah and the direct conflict with Adonijah. But then the next in line is to take care of Abiathar. Now, Abiathar, who was he in relation to David? He was a priest. We might think on the surface that Abiathar is a good fellow. Yeah. Well, maybe. But he doesn't prove to be a good fellow. Who does he side up with? Adonijah. Bad mistake on his part. Abiathar is to be deposed as priest. And we talked just briefly about that Wednesday night. Did a little more study on that as far as putting the charts together because I think it's important that we make some connection regarding who Abiathar is and what the problem is with Abiathar. But if you'll notice that God had in the beginning of the priesthood instructed that the priesthood would come from Aaron. Now, as the priesthood came from Aaron, you'll notice that Aaron had a number of sons. We talked about that Wednesday night. Nadab and Abihu, of course, they're not in this picture because they were consumed with fire in Leviticus chapter 10. But Eleazar and Phinehas are somewhat in this picture because of their descendants. We notice that Eleazar, the son of Aaron, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, were the first three high priests. Following that lineage down from Eleazar, we know that Aaron had another son whose name was Ithamar. Now, interestingly enough, by the time of David, we see two men. This is interesting, and I can't tell you all the details of this, that there are two men that are serving in the capacity of high priest. What are their names? Zadok and Abiathar. That's right. Zadok and Abiathar. Well, now Abiathar has paired up with Adonijah. And so that kind of sets him at odds. But Abiathar and his reigning as high priest, he has descended from really the wrong fork of the family tree. And so we've got to get things put back. And so not only do we have a problem with Abiathar and his affiliation with Adonijah, But we have a problem with Abiathar and his fork of the family tree. We've got to get this thing back to Eleazar, the original line of the priest. Now, I don't know. What I have read indicates that sometime during the period of the judges, we have a deviation somewhat from the lineage of Eleazar, which included then priests from Ithamar, which would bring us down to Abiathar. But with Abiathar taking the position that he has regarding Adonijah, and Abiathar being removed, it puts us back now to the direct lineage of Eleazar, who was to be the lineage of the priest. And then that brings us, of course, to the text of 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2. In verse 26, it is. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 26. It says, "And unto Abiathar the priest said the king, Get thee to Anathoth unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. And I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord Jehovah before David my father, and because thou wast afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted." So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto Jehovah, that he might fulfill the word of Jehovah which he spake concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. Now there's our connection. What had God said unto Eli? Well, you take that all the way back to 1 Samuel chapter 2. And what was the problem with Eli? All right. Yeah. All right. And so God's going to cut off the house of Eli from being priest. No more of the house of Eli is going to be priest. Well, we find that ultimately happens here. We know that's so because this is quoted. The reference is made here, that the prophecy regarding the house of Eli might be fulfilled. So Abiathar, his priesthood is ended. Well, in ending that, two things happen. The priesthood is restored to the lineage of Eleazar, and the prophecy that was made to Eli is also fulfilled. Now, having said all of that, we've got two things taken care of, but there's another element that we need to talk about. Go back, if you will, in the text to chapter 2, verse 5. Chapter 2, verse 5. When David is talking to Solomon, he said, "Moreover, thou knowest also what Joab the son of Zeruiah did unto me, even what he did unto the two captains of the host of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner, and unto Amasa the son of Jether, whom he slew, and shed the blood of war in peace, and put the blood of war upon his girdle that was about his loins, and his shoes, or in his shoes, that were upon his feet." All right, we've got a problem with Joab. I thought Joab was one of the good guys. He had been. What's Joab's blunders here? Not just here, but we'll cite a third illustration. Joab's messed up. Joab didn't always do what David told him to do. For example, who was Abner in relation to David? All right, he was Saul's chief captain. That's right. Which would have made him an enemy of David during that time. But after Saul is killed, what's the relationship between David and Abner? He defected over to David. So David recognizes he's an honorable soldier. Even though he was an enemy, he's still an honorable soldier. And so it's David's desire that Abner should live. What did Joab do? He killed him. No, it wasn't even a fair fight. What did he do? Yeah. Now, we've got another character here. We've got Amasa. Who was Amasa in relation to David? You know, we've got up here captain of Absalom's army. But then he, too, became appointed by David to serve in a very honorable position. And what did Joab do to him? He killed him. And very similar circumstance. He kind of went to see him and caught hold of his beard and stuck him with a knife. And then we find that he didn't die immediately. And you can go back and read the text. We'll not go into the gore of that. But though it's not mentioned in this text of 1 Kings chapter 2 by David, what else had Joab done contrary to the will of David? He killed his son Absalom. That's right. And seemingly with no remorse. Yes, just killed him. And David had asked Joab and the other military leaders to deal gently with the young man Absalom. He's my son. And Joab not only did not deal gently with him, but he just flat out killed him. Threw the darts into him, and then the other men finished him off. But what we know in that is that Joab is specifically mentioned by David to Solomon, I want you to take care of Joab. Well, now, Joab's done a whole lot of good things, but he's done a whole lot of very ugly things, too, in rebellion to the will of King David. So, Joab is to be slain. Now, I want to call your attention to the text here, what Joab did. We mentioned that briefly a moment ago. In verse 29. It was told the king, Solomon, that Joab is fled unto the tent of Jehovah, and behold, he is by the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go fall upon him. And Benaiah came to the tent of Jehovah and said unto him, thus saith the king, come forth. And he said, nay, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought the king word, and saying, thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. And the king said unto him, do as he said, doeth as he hath said, and fall upon him, and bury him, that thou mayest take away the blood which Joab shed without cause from me and from my father's house. Do you see what Joab did? He didn't have to kill these folks. But he did it contrary to the will of David and killed them anyway. At least the killing of Absalom was during war, but the killing of Abner and the killing of Amasa was to pretend to be a friend to them and then kill them. Not during time of war. Now, in verse 32, Jehovah will return his blood upon his own head because he fell upon two men more righteous and better than he and slew them with the sword. And my father David knew it not, to wit, Abner the son of Ner, a captain of the host of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, captain of the host of Judah. So shall their blood return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his seed forever. So Benaiah went down there and slew him in verse 34. And so he buried him, it tells us, in his own house in the wilderness. Now, we've got another character, Shemaiah. Who was he? All right, go ahead. Well, now, David didn't know what Joab did at the time that he did it, but he did know because he's the one that tells Solomon. Yeah. There in chapter 2, he's the very one that told Solomon in verse 5, chapter 2. Now, how he found it out and all of that, I'd have to go back and rethink that, but he's the one that told Solomon. How'd you like to have Benaiah's job? What would you call that man? Executioner. That's right. He's taking care of business. Shemaiah. What'd he do? Richard, you started that. He did. He cursed David, threw rocks at him, and just all kinds of ugly things. And then when Absalom was killed, Shemaiah came to David, and what was his desire? Now, don't kill me. Don't kill me. Let me live. Joab ready to kill him, yeah. And David said, no, we're going to let Shemaiah live. There's been enough killing. And so Shemaiah is then told by Solomon, you can live as long as you live in the city of Jerusalem. But Shemaiah had a problem that caused him to become real forgetful. You think you'd be that forgetful, Richard? I don't much think so. Here you've cursed the king who has become victorious over the one you've been supporting. And now the king has allowed you to live if you stay in Jerusalem. Now Solomon tells him that. But if you leave Jerusalem, what am I going to do to you? I'm going to kill you. Now you can have a nice life right here. But Shemaiah, after 3 years passed, he had a couple of servants that ran away. And so he takes off to find his servants, and when he finds them, he comes back to Jerusalem, and who does he find? Who does he meet? King Solomon. Pick up the reading, if you will, there, beginning about verse 40. It says in chapter 2, verse 40, and Shemaiah arose and saddled his ass and went to Gath. Where's that, by the way? To Achish. That's in the land of the Philistines. That's right. Gath, you recall, is where Goliath, the Philistine, was from. Gath is the city, and Achish is the king that, you recall, King David fled to, thinking that he would find safety there. So Shemaiah arose and saddled his ass and went to Gath, to Achish, to seek his servants. And Shemaiah went and brought his servants from Gath, and it was told Solomon that Shemaiah had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. And the king sent and called for Shemaiah. I think he's got that thought running through his mind, I'm in trouble now. Well, it says, and he said to him, did I not adjure thee by Jehovah and protest unto thee, saying, know for certain, and on the day that thou goest out and walkest abroad any whither, thou shalt surely die. And thou saidst unto me, the saying that I have heard is good. Now put yourself in that position. King Solomon said, didn't I tell you not to leave Jerusalem, and if you stay here you'll live? How does Shemaiah answer that? Oh, that's a good thing. Yeah, that's good. I'll do that. You said it was good, Shemaiah. Now 3 years later, what is it that you've done? Now what's going to happen? That's right. You're going to die. He said, why then, verse 43, hast thou not kept the oath of Jehovah and the commandment that I have charged thee with? And King Solomon, moreover, said to Shemaiah, thou knowest all the wickedness which thy heart is privy to, that thou didst to David my father. Therefore Jehovah shall return thy wickedness upon thine own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before Jehovah forever. And so the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and fell upon him so that he died, and the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Now I want you to see what Solomon is doing. Anybody that seems to this point to have presented a threat either to his father or to him, what's he done to them? He took care of that. Oh, he killed them. He had Benaiah kill them. And so he has secured the kingdom. Now that brings us to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3, where we note that as a young man, King Solomon makes some blunders. In verse 1, Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter. and brought her into the city of David until he had made an end of building his own house, the house of Jehovah, and the wall of Jerusalem round about. Well, let's pause right there. Solomon is declared king. Note the date. We're still right at 1,000 years before the coming of the Lord. And David has charged Solomon to keep the commandments, statutes, and ordinances of God. And what is it that just almost on the heels of that charge that Solomon has done? Married a foreign woman. That's right. That's right. You'll note in this text that he's brought in Pharaoh's daughter. Now, I understand the custom of the time was that when, for political purposes, it will enhance your kingship, you might give a daughter or take a daughter from another king. And that just kind of clinches the nails of alliances that you would have in those days. But go back to Deuteronomy chapter 17. Deuteronomy chapter 17. This is going to become, and has already become, very noteworthy in our study. Deuteronomy chapter 17. And look there, beginning at verse 14. God said through Moses, "When thou art come into the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me like the nations that are round about me, surely set him king over thee whom Jehovah thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not put a foreigner over thee who is not thy brother. Only he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to the end that they multiply horses. For as much as Jehovah hath said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold." What is it Solomon did? Right out of the chute. He's made an affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. We're not to do that. You've intermarried with what we have called the heathen nations. You've taken your wife from an Egyptian. You're not supposed to do that. But that's what Solomon did. And you'll notice in the text, in verse 2, it continues, "Only the people sacrificed in the high places, because there was no house built for the name of Jehovah until those days. And Solomon loved Jehovah, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places." Let's not misunderstand this. I think in times past I have misunderstood this. When it tells us that Solomon offered sacrifices in the high places, that at this point does not necessitate the conclusion that Solomon is already worshiping idols. But a high place was simply a place that was higher in elevation, where oftentimes altars were built, period. Sometimes those altars were altars that were built unto the worship of God. Sometimes those altars that were built in worship unto idols. It's unlikely at this point that Solomon is already worshiping idols, but nonetheless, he's headed that way. Let's stop there. We'll start with 1 Kings 3 Wednesday night with the desire of Solomon unto the Lord.